Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the fuck up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
We're back. Believe You Me. Michael Bisping back in the half mansion. I'm happy you're back, Bisping.
I'm happy to be back as well. Don't get me wrong. I had a wonderful time out there in Fire Island. Abu Dhabi is a beautiful place. The people were very hospitable, showed us great hospitality, amazing fights. And the hotel was beautiful. But of course, I'm back home. And there's no place I would rather be right now.
Yeah, a lot of traveling. How long is the flight overall?
Direct Abu Dhabi to Vegas, 16 hours. 16 hours. And then, of course, I'd stay overnight in Las Vegas, which is a little frustrating. But by the time we got in at midnight, there is no flights out. Rebecca did actually say she'd drive down and pick me up. And I'm like, babe, there's no point. You're going to pick me up at midnight. Then we're going to drive home. That's 3 a.m. You know what I mean?
The problem is when you get off a long flight like that, you're like, you want to be home. And then you realize, shit, I'm not even close to home.
Yeah, no,
you know,
exactly.
It's just so awful. Anytime like it's more than like a 20-minute drive from the airport to wherever I'm going, you're like, oh, you get off the flight, you get your bags, you finally, you're like, oh, and then you're like, oh, I gotta fucking drive for an hour and a half now just through bumblefuck nowhere.
This would have been 3.5 hours with Rebecca driving me. Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, we're going to get home at like 4 a.m. What's the point? I'll just try and go to sleep. I'll fly back in the morning. I'll be there at 9. I don't know what happened. I set my alarm for 6:20 and 6:30. I always do multiple alarms on the iPhone. You know what I mean? Because sometimes you press snooze, but you press off. And then, you know, and I couldn't get sleep for hours. I almost missed my flight. I woke up at 7. An alarm went off at 7. My flight was at 8. I was like, oh, my God. And I knew they had shuttles every 30 minutes. So there was a 7 a.m. shuttle. I jump out of bed. I rush down like a maniac. I got downstairs at 7:03. Right, I got dressed, I zipped up my bags, I put my shoes on. I didn't have time to brush my teeth, brush my hair, have a wash, anything, because I thought, if I miss this flight, I'm a goddamn loser. Do you know what I mean? I just want to be home. So I got downstairs at 7:03. From waking up at 7, I mean, that's pretty good going, especially hopping along with one leg in pain like I am. Need another knee replacement. But and then the bus was just driving off, and I'm hobbling along with my bags, screaming, stop, stop, stop. Just made it. Yeah, and anyway, there you go. Just made it. I am home, and it feels good.
I've never done that long of a flight, I don't think. I think my longest flight ever might just be Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Going from New York to LA, 6 hours.
It's a long one.
I hate it. I guess if I was first class doing something like that, it would definitely be better. But I can't sleep on a flight. I get sort of fidgety. My feet sort of hurt when I'm on a flight. I hate it. Can't do it.
Yeah. No. It sucks, but it's, it's worth it. And I've got to be honest, the UFC took care of us. The charter flights that they had were, you know, the plane was amazing. The staff were incredible. Etihad Airways, you know, they really did everything they could to make us comfortable. Great food. You know, typically airline food is a bit crap, but the food on that flight was exceptional. But yeah, there you go. Anyway, I'm home back in California. Everything's shutting down again. We're not going to go coronavirus crazy.
No coronavirus.
We're not going to talk into that, but we are heading in that direction.
Can I say I went, because me and you went and we rented a cabin in Big Bear, California, and that was, you know, some version of camping, glamping.
It wasn't glamping. It wasn't camping. It was staying in a beautiful home.
Yeah, it was a, you know, but you could convince yourself that you're doing some woodsy shit. You know, we went fishing a little bit.
We were in the woods. There was trees around us, but we were in a house. That was in no way, shape, or form camping. We were in a campy, woody area.
Environment. But, we tried to do nature-y things. We went fishing. And by the way, can I also rewind? I have people calling me, you're a piece of shit, Lewis. You're a scumbag. How dare you throw Cheeto bags into the lake at Big Bear, California. You know he's kidding, right? You know Michael Bisping kids. Not everything's a fucking... I didn't just throw a Cheetos bag into the lake. It flew off the fucking thing, and I didn't dive in after it, okay?
It was an accident.
Thank you, Bisping, for getting my
it
back.
It was an accident, but I gotta say, you showed no kind of, like, wanting to turn the boat around and grab it. I mean, we could have gone fishing for the litter.
We really could have. We got nothing else. We could have tried to catch the Cheetos bag. But the difference is, like, we went, like, even when we went to go buy, you weren't there when we got the bait, the worms.
Right.
But we just buy it like city slickers. Like, I walk in, I was like, I put my credit card on the counter. I was like, I'll take $50 worth of worms. They're like, what? What the fuck are you doing? We walked out with just, for no reason at all, just thousands of worms. And
no, I was like, get plenty, get a lot. Like, that's going to help us. Like, throw it in the water. Let's chum it, you know, with worms. I'm not sure it works like that, especially where we're in a boat driving away from where we just threw the worms in. Making noise, playing music. Yeah. We went fishermen.
I went real camping this weekend with my friend Robert Kelly, who has a 7-year-old as well. And it was real camping. It was in a tent. It was 96 degrees in the heat, but, you know, building a campfire, all that stuff. That's what we got to do with the kids, Bisping. Yeah, I want to see you in a camping environment and see how well you fare.
Hey, I was in the Boy Scouts, buddy. I can hold my own in the forest environment. I know what I'm doing. I was in the Scouts for a long time and the Cubs before that. Got kicked out of the Cubs for being a little shit. So then I had to... nothing. I was just never shut up. You know what I mean? I was trying to be funny and stupid. He sent me out of the room. And then after a while, he couldn't take it anymore. He's like, all right, fuck you. But fortunately, the Scouts let me join. Where did you go camping?
Upstate New York, it's called KOA Campground. So there's these big campgrounds, and you could rent a little plot or you could rent a cabin. You could do, you know, if you have like a camper that you drive in, which would be fun to have as well. But they have everything, little lake to fish in, like bouncy houses for the kids. They have like a little like playground areas if the kids get, you know, bored of, you know, fucking sitting in the woods, which is literally all you do when you camp.
Well, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do.
It kind of sucks, to be honest. It sucks when you really think about it.
Can you do a campfire? Because that, for me, because around here, obviously, California is very dry. And if I'm going to go camping, the piece de resistance, the pinnacle, the height of it is sitting around the campfire at night with my son, cooking sausages, toasting marshmallows, all that type of stuff, and just chatting and doing s'mores and all that. But if you can't do that, which you can't, well, it's certainly not the places I know of in California because of the fire risk, I don't know. What are you doing? What is the point? We're going to go sleep uncomfortably for a night in the woods, in the forest, where there is bears. I don't care what Harrington says. There is bears, and we might get murdered. Or we could go for a hike and then go home and sleep in comfort.
Yeah, no, that in New York, it's not dry like Cali, so you could build campfires everywhere. Our campfire was fucking roaring, and it's the best. It's the best. You have a campfire, just constantly putting wood on it. You know, roasted corn over the campfire is the best. Well, tell some scary stories.
Did you tell ghost stories? Come on.
I just tell them about when we hang out. It's very scary for the kids.
Yeah, Abu Dhabi was fantastic. The fights delivered. I'm sure you watched the fights. And, of course, not finished yet. Saturday night, we've got Robert Whittaker taking on Darren Till, which I am very, very intrigued about that fight. That's just a tremendous fucking fight.
That's obviously in Abu Dhabi?
That's this Saturday, the final fight in Abu Dhabi, yeah. Wow. We've still got one more event. It's incredible what the UFC pulled off out there with the assistance of, you know, the local authorities. You know, the arena's incredible. The hotel was incredible. And the fights, to put four fights on in 2 weeks, I mean, that's an achievement. All these different people coming in from all over the world, just logistically, just to pull that off. It really is incredible.
It is incredible. And, you know, I think when the smoke clears and we look back in history, not even just in mixed martial arts history, or UFC history, we're going to look back at this moment and you have to appreciate the fact that the UFC took the lead on this. It's not even like they took the lead in MMA. No other sports were figuring it out. And Dana White was very, you know, he was relentless with trying to make this happen. He was like, there's a way to do this. And who was the first fighter that tested positive? Not for this. I'm talking about back when they were doing the first fight.
I know who it was. Man, who was it now? I'm not sure. Back in Jackson, Jacare.
Jacare. Okay. Yeah, so remember, I think everyone was sort of like, oh shit, here we go. And the way the UFC even handled that, and there's been a few people that have tested positive, the way they sort of handle it and got ahead of it and were responsible, they were sort of able to answer the hate before the hate train was able to sort of overtake it. And they proved that you can make this work if you are responsible and you're smart. And I think that now I know that Bellator has an event coming up, and I know there was just an event with Pat Miletich. We'll talk about it in a little bit this week, and hopefully we can get some video
Pat
of that.
Miletich.
The Pat Miletich is back in action.
Pat Miletich, wow, he's back in action, is he? Okay, all right, can't wait to hear about that. Yeah. No, do you know what? The testing protocols that everyone had to go through there was really, you know, intense, but of course it was for the best. We had to be down there. I think we got tested. Well, first of all, we got tested on the Sunday. Then we got tested when we landed. Then we got tested the next day. Then we could wait 2 days. Then we got tested again. I think I must have had 6 tests when I was there, and they were turning around the results really, really quick. And the amount of people, I'm not sure how many tests it was, but I think I might have heard someone, if I'm misquoting this, I apologize. But I think it was somewhere in the region of 10,000 tests were done. You know, which is fucking incredible. It really is. I mean, the manpower, the cost, the expense, all in the name of fighter safety, and obviously safety for everybody throughout this crazy time. And yeah, they did it. And then, yeah, sometimes it was a ball hit because you had to get your test done. And then when you got the all cleared, then you had to go down the next morning and get a wristband on. So there was like, you always had to, your life kind of revolved around safety regarding the virus, which of course we have to do, you know, but it was a little problematic. But realistically, it was getting out of bed, walk downstairs, get a quick wristband on and go back to bed, you know, because you're trying to adjust your sleep patterns. But the fights were great, enough of that. But yeah, well done again to the UFC, Dana White, and as I say, all the people in Abu Dhabi that came together and just showed such great hospitality. But
there's an energy, you know what I'm saying? Like, you feel this energy from the UFC with these events. It's like they're firing off all these events. We've also mentally and psychologically adjusted to there not being an audience there in a weird way, right? So yeah, it's like it doesn't really, I don't notice it.
That doesn't get spoke of anymore. At first, that was the talk of the town.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's become the norm. And to be honest, in some ways, I kind of prefer it. Excuse me. Pardon me. No, of course, when there's a crowd, it does add to the atmosphere and the energy. And when the arena goes dark before the main event walks out, and you know, you see all the phones. And all, yeah, of course, you know, I mean, it's an incredible experience. If you've never been to a UFC event live, when that happens, you know, and then Barbara O'Reilly, that music comes on before the main card and the crowd's all cheering and stuff. It's incredible. It is. And that's why it's the best indoor sporting activity in the world. But also with there being no crowd, it is different, and it does provide an intensity to the fights, you know, because as we've said this,
the intimacy,
you can hear the fighters talking, you can hear every punch, every blow, you can hear the corner man, you know, so it is different. But, you know, of course, we're looking forward to the crowds coming back. And hopefully that will be sooner rather than later. But until then, the UFC seems to have figured out a game plan going forward. Should we get into some of these fights, Lewis?
Yeah, what do you want to do? You want to go in reverse this past Saturday and then talk about Kattar versus Ige?
Freshest in my mind. Main event. So we'll go main and co-main, and then any other standouts. In fact, we'll just start with that guy. I don't know if you saw him. He fought, I think, last week, but then he fought. Hold on, no. What about Khamzat Chimaev? He fought John Phillips, a Welsh guy. I think it was the second fight of the main card. He came out, he took him down, and just it was a shame for John Phillips. If you don't know who he is, he's a Welsh fighter, good stand-up guy, heavy hands. But this guy just took him down and just battered him with little ground and pound shots over and over. But he was hitting with the four knuckles here. You know, those knuckles there are covered, but on the gloves, those ones aren't. But still, that's not an illegal blow. And he was just peppering him with these little shots, and the fucking knuckles were banging into him and just cut his face to pieces. I think it might have been a submission. I'm not sure. Harrington, are you there, my friend?
Yeah, I'm here.
What was that? How are you, Harrington?
Are you living in a homeless shelter? What is that?
What do you mean, what is this?
Lucy, it looks like the other end of your apartment. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
you
both got I live in a homeless shelter. I'm not in a fucking half mansion over here. I'm in a homeless shelter. Yeah, why are you drying your clothes on camera? Jesus Christ, just pick an angle, Harrington.
I'm not drying them. This is my closet that I don't like. I don't have a closet. This is where my nice clothes hang.
Yes.
And I'm on
you
my
see, You see his dress shirts there? For what occasion are you wearing a dress shirt, Harrington? I've never seen you in a dress shirt in my life.
For when you invite me somewhere nice, because I know okay. Lewis isn't going to.
No, we're going to do a California trip very soon. Bisping's back in town now. Woo, baby.
Yeah, I'm back. I can't wait to host you guys. Oh, that's the highlight of my life. No, Hamzat Chimaev, did you watch him? Because he's fighting again this Saturday. He had a quick turnaround. He normally fights at 170. He took the fight on short notice. I'm sorry, Lucy. I know you didn't see this guy.
But
this guy does need some fucking props, man, because he looked incredible. Now he's fighting again next Saturday at 170. I mean, this guy's a straight-up killer. Did you see him, Harrington?
I saw the I do like John Phillips, so I think I came in like right towards the end of that fight. I was like walking home from the studio and I caught him. He is an absolute monster.
Oh, he really is. I'm telling you, he has a very, very bright future. And now he's fighting at his regular weight class on Saturday, as I say, at 170. Another quick one as well, Lewis. I'm doing honorable mentions before we get to the big ones. Okay. Am I getting this right? How is it? Manur Lizez? Is that he's the local guy. He's from Dubai. Manur Lizez, was that his name?
Yeah, I believe that's how you pronounce it. I
should know this. I was the commentator.
I was going to say, don't they give you a pronunciation guide with all that shit?
Yeah, no. But, you know, I'm still recovering from the flight. Manur Lizez. And who did he fight again? Yeah, he fought Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. And Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, as we know, is an absolute knockout artist. And this guy, Manur Lizez, do you know the story, Lewis? You probably don't.
No, I don't.
Right, so here's the story. Dana White was at his son's birthday party in a restaurant in Vegas, I think. And this guy, Manur Lizez, his friend just went up and approached Dana White. I said, Dana, I'm really sorry to bother you, but you've got to see this video. It's the highlight reel of my friend. He's from Dubai. He's a fighter. You got to see it. And Dana watched the highlight reel and was impressed. I was like, holy shit. So then he spoke to the matchmakers, and the matchmakers were like, what the fuck, Dana? You know, and Dana said, well, match him up with whoever you want. So they matched him up with Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. And that guy is a knockout artist. And he went out there and looked fucking incredible. He just, I'm telling you, his performance was unbelievable. He's undefeated. This kid has got a bright future. He's huge for the weight class. Super athletic. Took tons of shots. But he had a great performance. But, you know.
Sorry to cut you off. But I think the lesson there is, you know.
Have a good highlight reel made.
Well, not just have a good highlight reel. The kid is Adam. Is Dana's son's friend. I guess he was part of Dana's son's graduation party. Harrington, once again, correcting Michael Bisping on his own show.
No, but that's okay. That's okay, because I'm not 100% on those facts. So I appreciate the clarification.
This is Harrington. A new Michael Bisping. He's on something today. What the fuck is going on?
No. I don't want to get these details wrong. These are pertinent details. I'm a little shaky on it. You know, I've just fucking researched fucking three fights. You know, I've gone through 100 fights, and then as soon as those fights happened, I was on to the next one, so out of my mind. That's why I forgot his name, Manur Lizez.
What is going on with you today? You're the newer, nicer Michael Bisping. Something happened to you in Dubai or in Abu Dhabi where...
Yeah, I made a dick out of myself. I'm trying to be a better person. What can I say? You know, really? Jesus Christ.
How much of a dick did you make out of yourself? No, I've never seen you be so nice to Harrington.
I was a dick at the airport. Did you hear
the way he asked Harrington to come in? He was like, Harrington, are you there? Are you there? My good
no,
friend.
I did not sound like, I didn't sound like Mary Poppins. But anyway, so yeah, you were saying, go on, continue.
Okay,
with
no,
your
but I think,
rendition.
I think the lesson is, actually it is a different lesson if it wasn't his friend. I was going to say to take the shot, because you gotta always ask for what you want. People sometimes sit around and wait for it to happen, and it doesn't work that way. But that is completely pointless, because I was saying that from the perspective of
his friend. His friend hooked him up big time. His friend went for it.
But it wasn't his friend. It was Dana White's son's friend.
Oh, it was. Well,
so he did just sit there, and it just happened to him. So really the lesson is, guys, have a good highlight reel, and the rest will just, you know.
Well, if you're a world-class fighter, which this guy clearly is with a bright future, maybe that's the lesson. Maybe just get really good and then people will talk about you.
Well, yeah,
you know,
become the best.
Because I tell you what, he lived up to the hype and to the opportunity because I'm telling you, that was such an impressive debut. What made it so impressive was Al Hassan, pardon me, teed off on him, and he fucking hits hard, Hassan. He has one punch knockout power, and he teed off on this kid like 20 times, and he just took all these fucking shots, smiled back at the guy, and then went to war. So well done to that man. All right, I just wanted to have those honorable mentions because they deserved it.
Mr. Bisping, we must thank CrossRope, who I love. CrossRope is such a cool workout program. Now that everyone's getting back into shape, gyms are still closed around the country for the most part. In a lot of cities, you got to do it at home now. And CrossRope has take a classic workout like jumping rope or skipping rope, as the British would like to say. And they've made a really, really cool program with different size weighted ropes. They have an amazing app with unbelievable programs that are focused on everything from cardio to strength training. I'm going to tell you right now, Bisping, this is the wave of the future.
Well, it really is. And certainly if you follow Karen Bryant from the UFC on Instagram, that's all she talks about. She loves this product. So anyway, there you go, a little side note. But listen, yeah, cardio equipment machines, they're so boring, you know. So, but skipping is a lot of fun. Jumping rope is a lot of fun. I love it. All boxers love it. It's one of the first things you learn as a combat as a fighter. You walk into a fight gym. I don't know what I was trying to say. I was trying to like make it sound all jazzy. You got kickboxing, you got boxing, they jump rope, they skip. Why? Because it burns calories, it gives muscle endurance to the legs, to the shoulders, a full body workout, and it takes a lot of concentration as well. So it's a lot of fun. And of course, there's the app that tracks all your workouts, tell you how many calories you burnt, how long you've been going, how many times you jumped. Short on time, no worries. CrossRope lets you get a killer full body workout in just 30 minutes. It combines the intense cardio workout of jumping rope with full body resistance training. So you get strong and stay healthy at home or anywhere else, Lewis.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you up, but I do want to say this because you're a professional athlete, okay? Everyone knows me. I'm an undefeated fighter. It sounds a little bit intimidating sometimes. If you've ever picked up a jump rope and tried to skip rope, in the beginning, you're like, what's going on? I can't do this. The cool part about CrossRope is they have weighted ropes and they give better feedback, which makes it easier for beginners to get started. That's a really key component here because in the beginning, before I started jumping rope, it was a little bit like, what's going on? You see boxers doing, you see people doing all these tricks. This is great for beginners and it's great for people that have tons of experience with it as well.
Yeah, and of course, you've got the interchangeable handles, one that will click, you change the handles so the ropes get heavier and things like that, so you can build a little bit of resistance. Of course, my knees are destroyed. I need another knee replacement. That's because years of running, no impact on the knees like if you're running. So afterwards, you'll feel great, releasing those endorphins. You get a good sweat on, full body workout, and yeah, there you go. If this sounds like something you want to try, and certainly I do recommend it, you want to give this a shot, go to crossrope.com, CRSS rope, ROPE.com, crossrope.com/believe, and you're going to get up to $40 off your CrossRope sets plus free shipping when you check out at crossrope.com/believe. That's BELIEVE. That's crossrope.com/believe. $40 off, up to, of your first order.
Can we say, all right, let's jump back into it?
Oh, all right, let's jump back into it or skip back into it. We're skipping back into the show, everybody. We'll get into the main event. Main event, Benavidez taking on Figueiredo. Did you watch, Lewis?
Yeah, I watched the main event, co-main event. This was Saturday night, so I was camping, so I couldn't get service
right,
in the woods.
That's right.
But I watched them when I got back. And yeah, dude, Davison Figueiredo. Holy shit, dude. I love Benavidez. I've always liked Benavidez a lot. I think this is Benavidez's fourth title shot. He's a killer, but Figueiredo knocked him down three times in the fight, went for a submission early in the fight, ended up finishing with a rear naked choke. Benavidez had nothing for him in this fight at all. Nothing.
Yeah, listen, you know, let's just talk about Joe for a second. I mean, Joe's been around the game forever. And by the way, one of the nicest guys, him and his wife, Megan Oliva, they're just such a lovely couple. They really
are. Is she working that night?
I don't think she did. She was there. I think she walked him out to the octagon as well, but I don't think she was working. But yeah, they're just a lovely couple. And Joe's the nicest, classiest guy. He really is. And over the years, I've really got to know him and respect him a lot. And a hell of a fighter. I mean, he can scramble so well. Excellent knockout power for a little guy. He's got great submissions. I mean, his fight with Jussie Formiga prior to Benavidez, Figueiredo, pardon me, was incredible. And then, of course, that first fight, for anyone that watched, it was marred in controversy. First of all, Figueiredo didn't make weight. Then there was a clash of heads. And then Benavidez won the first round in that first fight. And then in the second fight, there was a massive clash of heads. Blood started pouring out, and then Figueiredo cracked him with the right hand, and that was that. So because of the controversy and the missing weight, UFC, booked the rematch, and Figueiredo made the most out of it. You know what I mean? Figueiredo looked incredible. And I was talking to Benavidez afterwards. You know, we shared the bus ride back to the hotel. I was talking to him backstage, and I was chatting to him at the hotel a little bit as well. And of course, he was massively disappointed. But because there was no controversy, he was like, no, I accept it. He was the better man on the night. He beat me. He doesn't know what he's going to do from here on in. He was obviously very disappointed. I mean, come on. He thought he was going to get crowned world champion after so long, after being at the top of the sport, top of the food chain for so long. But then, as I say, Figueiredo's insane. He's an absolute animal. I can see him being a champion for a long, long time. He's the full package. He's massive for the weight class. He hits hard as hell. I mean, that first punch that he hit Benavidez with, Benavidez just dropped, and I thought, holy shit, he's knocked him out. Then he took his back and nearly choked him out. All credit to Benavidez. He managed to escape. I don't know how he got out of that. Then he got dropped again and his back taken. I think he escaped that. And then the third time was just too much, and you could see it was a really haunting image because he was unconscious, but his eyes were still open. I was like, hold on a minute. He looks unconscious. And then the referee quickly stepped in. As I say, commiserations, Benavidez, but you got to, the night belonged to Figueiredo, we got to celebrate that.
Yeah, Figueiredo, he looked incredible. I mean, and here's the thing that I said about, what's his name? Cejudo. It's like Cejudo, it's so funny. And once again, I don't believe Cejudo's retired, but he just did not do enough. There's guys out there, you see Figueiredo and you see the performance you put out against Jose Benavidez, and you're like, no, dude, Cejudo, I don't know that you could take him. So you can't, it's just a crazy thing to retire and go, you know what, I'm the best. But he didn't sort of, I feel like that division, Cejudo could have been a part of sort of establishing that division as being a really crazy competitive division. But it just sort of had to, it had to come to fruition, and Cejudo dipped out. But I think he'll probably end up coming back, and you'll create a bunch of other incredible contenders. So yeah, it's probably good for the division, to be honest.
Yeah, and I got to say that 125 is really heating up. We also had Tim Elliott taking on Ryan Benoit. That was a great fight. And then there was Askar Askarov taking on, who did he fight? Harrington, helped me out. Askar Askarov fought Alexander Pantoja. That was an interesting matchup as well. So there's some real big stars coming out of the 125 division. But as I say, you're right, because I was thinking, fuck, I would love to see Cejudo Figueiredo. I would like to see, because honestly, after that, what he did to Joe and what he did to his last few opponents as well, I really don't see anybody beating Figueiredo anytime soon. And another two defenses, maybe two or three defenses, then he becomes a star, a huge star. And then him versus Cejudo. The only problem with that is, I would guess, is that Cejudo now, he walked away from 125. And he always had problems making 125. Then he was defending at 35. And now he's talking about fighting Volkanovski at 45 if he comes out of retirement. Point of all that is to say that making 125 may be really, really tough for him. And it would have to be very tempting for him to have to go through that weight cut again. That would be the only obstacle to that fight.
What do you think about this? Because Figueiredo said he wants to already go up to 135 and have a super fight against what's his name? Jan.
Piotr Jan.
Yeah, Piotr Jan.
Who said that? Sorry.
So Figueiredo has already said that. Which, once again, you're a little old school on this, and I know your opinion on this because we've spoken about this in the past. But isn't it almost like, dude, chill? Defend
you
the title.
You just won it. You know what I mean? I get it. And I like the ambition. That's what everyone wants to do. Everyone wants the ability to fight for a second belt. And we won't go into it because
that's a new thing, though.
We did talk about it
the past 2 years.
Yeah. And, because, well, these guys, I mean, Figueiredo's massive for the weight class. So, of course, 125 is tough. He's got that belt. And if you fight the a different champion in a different weight class, of course, yours is always fine. You're not risking that. So it's always there, you know. But I'd like to see him defend against the number one contenders, Askar Askarov, whoever it is, Pantoja. There's a lot of good talent down there now. So I'd like to see him defend the belt. And as I say, if he defends successfully a number of times, either a Cejudo or, a Piotr Jan, who, by the way, looked fucking outstanding against Jose Aldo. My God.
And that's a killer fight right there, Piotr Jan versus Figueiredo.
Fuck me, it is. Especially when you consider Figueiredo's massive. When you could see Figueiredo.
He's tall, right?
Against Benavidez, he was just so much bigger. He was certainly a couple of inches or a few inches taller, but just so much bigger, broader shoulders, no fat on the guy whatsoever, probably like 2-3% body fat. And that's the only way he's making weight because he's fucking gigantic for that weight class. So, him at 35 would be a very interesting prospect. But as I say, he's just been crowned 125 champ. I'd like to see him do some work there.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like the old school way that they would do it, where you couldn't fight for another title if you had the title. And it's only because it's not, look, I think it's in mixed martial arts, people are so prone to injury. And now, especially with coronavirus and the world being sort of in disarray, it's like to have somebody have two titles, I think it's hard enough for guys to defend the titles by themselves once or twice a year if they have one title. So it sort of holds up the division. So I understand that as well. But it does seem to be now every single champion is always talking about getting a double title and getting an extra title. Does it mean anything behind the scenes except for sort of bragging rights? It's not like you get a better deal with the UFC. I mean, brand.
I don't know. That would be on individual terms. You know what I mean? What they negotiate. I have no idea about that, but come on. I understand why they want to do it. That's by winning two titles, you're becoming part of a very elite group. And only, you know, there's still only a handful of people to do that. Obviously, Conor, DC, Cejudo. Who else is there? Am I missing any?
Amanda.
Oh, Amanda Nunes, of course. There might be one or two others. George St. Pierre.
Yeah.
Prick.
BJ Penn,
BJ Penn. There you go. That's a good one. So, if you do that, you achieve legendary status. You know what I'm saying? Which you can achieve by being a long-time champ and whatever. But two weight division champ, I get it. There's an allure there, you know. And as I say, you become a legend. So you can understand it, but still, you got a clean house, I would think, in your division first. co-main event.
Co-main. Let me plug in my phone while you intro this. I apologize.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just jumping off camera for a second. I'll just chat away to myself, apparently. Obviously, I was very interested in this one, Kelvin Gastelum. That was quick. Jeez, yes. Louise. Calm yourself down, Louis. Calm down. I was interested in this one, obviously, being a former middleweight. That seems like a long time ago. I'm nowhere near middleweight these days. But as a former middleweight, I keep an eye on that division. That's why I'm so interested in Darren Till and Whittaker. Pardon me, my mind went blank at the weekend. But Gastelum versus Hermanson, big fight. Of course, Hermanson was on a roll. He beat Jacare and he looked title challenger. He looked like a title challenger. Then he dropped a loss to Jared Cannonier, which kind of slowed his roll. So this was a comeback for him. Kelvin Gastelum, of course, he got beat off Adesanya in that Fight of the Year contender or Fight of the Year winner. Then he lost again to Darren Till. So again, he was very hungry coming back. So this was, you know, I knew both guys were going to bring it. We spoke to both guys at the fighting meetings. They were both intense. They were both focused. They were both very confident. Both had the greatest camp, all that good stuff. And the fight was over pretty quickly, you know. Yeah, and I didn't think Cannonier would get Gastelum to the floor because I thought that's his main game plan. He's got the better jiu-jitsu. He's a jiu-jitsu specialist. He likes to take people down. He did that against Jacare. But Gastelum being the shorter guy, being the former wrestler, having the lower center of gravity, and being 185, the stocky guy, guys like that are always hard to take down. But Gastelum, Hermanson, got a body lock takedown, but Gastelum reversed it straight away. It was beautiful. It was really, really nice the way he did it. Then what happened after that? I'm a little blurry. I know what the finishing sequence was, of course, but what was the next move? Did Hermansson get mount or what happened? No, Gastelum was on top.
Yeah, he was standing over him and he went for like the ankle. He was on his back.
Yeah, that's right. No, he got a heel hook. Yeah, Gastelum standing over him trying to land shots and then he leg-laced.
He wrapped up his leg, yeah. He
wrapped up his leg, that's right.
So, yeah, it's rare. We don't really see heel hooks that often anymore, right? It's sort of a rare thing. Why is that?
Well, number one, it makes martial arts to go for, you know, ground attacks, heel hooks, leg attacks like that. It is dangerous. I mean, the classic example, you probably didn't see it, but it's, you know, part of MMA history in the UK. Ian Freeman, back in the day when he beat Frank Mir at UFC 38 and a half, the brawl at the hall. Frank Mir went for a knee bar and Freeman just pounded the shit out of him, you know, smashed his face up pretty good. And then, of course, that is always the danger. If you're going for it, you can stand down and rain blows. Now, of course, you had guys like Huzumar Palharish back in the day that it was so deadly and so fast that you didn't have time to punch them in the face because they would just snap. And heel hooks are like that. They're
so
dangerous.
He got in trouble a bunch of times, actually, Huzumar Palharish. Remember, he was the...
He held it on far too long from the UFC,
but I definitely got suspended for it. He got into a bunch of trouble a few times for holding onto heel hooks for too long.
Yeah, and I think he held on a choke as well one time. I think that was when he got his marching orders. Yeah, held on to a choke.
But do you think it was like... I mean, look, in that moment, like... it's the problem with jiu-jitsu. It's not the problem with it. It's just sort of like... you know, you hold on to a knee bar for a half second too long after the tap, you could, you know, tear somebody's knee into pieces. Really, really dangerous. So it's like, it's almost like, I remember at the time thinking it was sort of unfair because I didn't think he was holding on in a malicious way. I think that he was so fucking just like balls to the wall.
Yeah.
And he was just, you know, he would just go for it. So, but yeah, it was he was very brutal. But yeah, it's sort of, you don't see that often. We saw two knee bars. I'm sorry, we saw two heel hooks on the card alone. So,
well, no, it was one knee bar and one heel hook.
Okay, well,
No. And the thing about heel hooks, and this is why Gastelum tapped. You know, for anyone that's never done jiu-jitsu, well, number one, they're banned in amateur mixed martial arts, and they're banned in some, certainly for children tournaments, because if somebody catches you in the heel hook position, initially you might not feel pain and you don't feel pain. And then guess what? Snap. A ligament snaps, your ACL or whatever it is. It's like, so if this is your foot, this is your fingers, and this is your heel, and they wrap it around. So they kind of torque it this way. And here is connected to a ligament. I'm sure if it's the ACL, whichever one it is, up in your knee. So they twist it because they contort the body. They have the heel hooked trapped under your foot. And then they lean their body this way, and you don't feel pain. And then, as I say, pop, it just goes. So whenever I was training for a fight, if anybody got me in the heel hook position, I just go, okay, tap, you got me. Tap. Because in my mind, I was like, it was bad enough for me to allow you to even get that position. If you got that position, now in a fight, of course, there's things you can do. You can defend, you can roll with it. You got to kick on their ass with your other leg, or you can lean forward, you can grab their hands. You got to fight their hands and stuff. But it is, if somebody gets their heel hook on you, you got to be really, really careful. And it can be a career damaging injury as well. You might never fight again. You wouldn't be able to train.
They don't let the kids do any leg locks at all in my son's jiu-jitsu school.
Because the error of margin is so small. The margin of error, pardon me. The error of margin is the margin of error is so small. And as I said, one little false move or 1 second too late, and you can have a really, really bad problem. You know, and as I say, career ending injuries. So Gastelum, I mean, he's got to be kicking himself because, I mean, Hermansson was slick. It was a very, very slick heel hook. And I thought, he's not going to get that. He's not going to get that. But the problem was for Gastelum was that it was early in the first round. Early in the first round. And that's when stuff like that's going to work. It was a three-round fight, co-main event. If that was the second round or the third round, they're covered in sweat. You know, and you would have just slid out of that nicely. But in the first round, when you're still pretty dry, yeah, it's bad. It was super slick from Gastelum. Sorry, from Hermansson. And I feel for Gastelum because no doubt he trained hard and he felt very confident and positive going in there. But that's the thing, those little heel hooks, you know, he tapped. He wasn't even in pain. It's just fucking annoying. And he said afterwards, he said, I'm very embarrassed, et cetera, et cetera. And I understand that. But ultimately, I mean, the submissions are designed to work, and the heel hook is a brutal one, and yeah, it looks so painless for the viewer, that the uninitiated viewer on TV watching, they're like, what the fuck, why did he tap? But as I just said, it's they are crushing.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. Now Calvin's in a weird position because he's got three losses in a row, but it's also to just absolute killers: Israel, Darren Till. No shame in losing to those guys, and now Jack Hermansson. So what does he do from here? I mean, Kelvin, he came from 170, moved up to 185. Three in a row, that's a dangerous territory to be in.
Yeah, it is. I don't think, you know, for some guys, three in a row sometimes, you know, that'll be the end of their UFC run. They've got to go back to the regional circuit, win some fights. I don't think Kelvin Gastelum is in that neighborhood. He's a very, very, you know, he's a big name. He's very well-known.
Ultimate Fighter winner, former champion. I mean, it's a different story.
Yeah, but I what it means is that for the short term, when I say short term, 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, you know, he's not in those title conversations. You know, he's still a young guy. I don't know how old he is. Harrington, just look that up and say it out loud without having to make me look at your notes because I can't see them. I keep having to lean forward and click buttons and fucking, you know, just say it. You have a microphone.
He's 28. He's 28. I got it.
Just say it. Now and again, chime in vocally, Harrington. Stop making me read notes. I don't read. See what I mean? He's 28 years old. He's still got another 10 years in the game. And you learn. It's all experience. And the thing about mixed martial arts is that there's so much to learn. And obviously, I mean, for me, look at me. Towards the end of my career, that's when I had my best years. So, yeah, Kelvin's still got a long road ahead of him.
So, I mean, what do you do here? He has to do something, obviously. At the very least, the public perception has to be he's changing something up. Do you change camps? Do you take some time off? Do you change weight class? If you're in Kelvin Gastelum's corner, you're on Team Gastelum, what do you say to him, and what would be the advice that you would give him?
I don't think he needs to change camps. You know, I mean, down here where he is in Orange County, he's got tremendous striking coach, Rafael Cordeiro. He's got, who's, you know, they found the shooter box back in the day and, you know, one of the main shooter box guys. So he's a great striking coach and a very well-rounded kind of coach. He's been around MMA, you know, the highest level back in Pride back in the day. So he knows, you know, the sport in general. Of course, he trains with a great team, Fabrizio Verdum, Benil Dariush, used to be Rafael Dos Anjos. You know, there's high-level jiu-jitsu guys. So it's not a case of finding a new team. You know, and I don't think he needs to look at that too much. The fact of the matter is, he just got caught in a fucking heel hook. Mm. It happens, you know, and it sucks. But I don't think it's a case for finding a new team.
Yeah, and he didn't lose decisions. He lost a split to Till, and then he lost a pretty close fight to Israel.
Oh, dude, yeah, exactly. And that fight with Adesanya was, as I said, fight of the year, and it was an incredible fight. And he bust Adesanya up. That was by far the toughest fight of Adesanya's career. And then, of course, he had a close fight with Till, and Till's a fucking monster. Till's the top of the food chain striker. So there's no shame in those losses. And then he got caught in a heel hook. And as I say, you know, it's almost like slipping on a banana peel. Now, of course, Hermansson, I'm not taking away from his credit. He was very technical from his victory, pardon me. I'm not taking anything away. He did that. It wasn't an accident. He didn't slip on a banana peel and fall into it. He set that up. He laced the leg perfectly and he went for it. Maybe Gastelum was just a little quick off the mark defending that, you know?
Yeah, I think it's almost like people aren't really giving Jack Hermansson a ton of credit. It's almost like the story is like Gastelum slipping. But look, Jack Hermansson, obviously, you know, great. I think that, yeah, Kelvin is a super marketable fighter. I think that he probably should just take some time off. You know, MMA fans, once again, we've talked about this a million times, very, very fair weather. And he's got the highlight reel. He has so much history in the sport that all it takes is a nice matchup for him and he'll come back strong. So I think Kelvin's great. I hope to see him fight again sometime soon.
So yeah, I'm just looking up the record of Jack Hermanson, you know, because he went on quite the run. He beat Talis Lightish, who's a tough fighter, former opponent of mine, he former title world challenger against Anderson Silva, knocked him out. Beat Gerald Merchart, submission. Beat David Branch, submission. Decision, Jacare Souza. Do you know what I mean? That's a very impressive run. And then he got clipped of Jared Cannonier. Then he comes back and he submissions, heel hooks, Kelvin Gastelum. Do you know what I mean? So Jack Hermanson definitely deserves a credit. He's definitely in line as a future contender down the line. It all depends what happens. So
there's a moment.
Go ahead.
No, sorry. I was going to say there's sort of a moment where, like, you know, Hermanson now with a win over Gastelum, in my opinion, is pretty big. I think that's his best win, you know, to date. And I think this is sort of the moment where people will start talking about him if he can sort of get a few in a row from here. So
he laid it all out on the post fight show. He said, listen, Whittaker and Till are fighting at the weekend. And we know that Adesanya versus Costa, that is booked down the line pretty soon-ish. So he said he wants to fight the winner of Till versus Whittaker, which is a good natural progression. And then the winner of that fight fights the winner of Izzy versus Paulo Costa. And that's, you know, that's very realistic game planning. And it's another tough fight, you know, whoever wins that fight. And of course, Whittaker versus Will. Whittaker versus Till. We'll get into that on the next show, Wednesday or Thursday. So we'll break that one down in style there. But yeah, well done to everyone on that fight card. Because again, another great night. But well done to Kelvin Gastelum. All right, let's just take a quick second to hear about BlueChew.com. All right, listen, we all like sex. And if you like sex, you're going to love BlueChew.com. Why is that? Well, because BlueChew offers a performance enhancement for the bedroom. I mean, come on, even men as manly and stallion like as Luis J. Gomez on occasion could do with a little assistance here and there.
It's not even assistance. It's like there's more of you than you even know. There's a bigger, better you inside of you, and you have to unleash him. And the way you do that is with Blue Chew. I'll tell you right now, you guys have heard of Viagra Cialis. These are the more expensive versions. This is the generic version. It's a chewable pill. It is. They cut out all the middleman. It is so much more affordable. Everybody who tries Blue Chew loves it, and it's no longer for men with erectile dysfunction. This is for people who, if you want to give your wife, your girlfriend a little bit extra one night, it's your anniversary, Valentine's Day, it's her birthday. Well, you know what? Guess what? Blue Chew will enable you to go those few extra rounds.
Yeah, that's right. Listen, all you got to do is see an online physician, which is a free consultation, by the way, so it's cheaper than the other two, Viagra and Cialis. Wait,
it's a questionnaire. It's not like you're fucking sitting down with a doctor and being like, you know, they have you fill out questions. Done.
Yeah, and listen, and there's no, there's this, like, shroud of shame surrounding, like, oh, I've got erectile dysfunction. This isn't for that. Of course, if you have got erectile dysfunction, this will help. But this is to, enhance the pleasure for both of you. You know, I mean, as Lewis said, there is a bigger, better you inside of you. but listen, all you got to do, as we said, there's no in-person doctor visit, no awkward conversation, no waiting in line at the pharmacy. It ships directly to your door in discreet packaging. And the blue chewables from BlueChew.com are prescribed online by a doctor and made inside the USA. Blue Chews give you the confidence in bed every time. You and your partner will love it. All you got to do is chew it and do it. If you want to give this a try, go to BlueChew.com. That's BlueChew.com. Use the promo code BELIEVE, and then you will get your first order for free, but only when you use that promo code. Remember, BlueChew.com. Promo code is BELIEVE. Just pay $5 shipping, and you and your significant other will be happy as Larry. All right. Let's get back into it. Where you want to go, Lewis?
If you want to give a quick breakdown, Couture versus, that was a great fight. Obviously, it's about a week ago now, so we got a little bit of time between that. But I thought that was great. There is some other news as well I want to touch on that Harrington sent in the notes.
Kelvin Cater deserves a big mention, of course. Of course, it was, as I said before, when there's so many fight cards, when that one passes, I just focus on the next one. So I would have to see it again to give an in-depth breakdown. Right. But I know that Kelvin Cater looked outstanding. Danny Ige is always a tough opponent for anybody. You know, he turned up in shape, on weight. He fucking fought hard. You know, he fought at a blistering pace. He was trying his best, but Cater was just too good, man. He had excellent leg kicks. He had the longer reach. He used it well. Boxing looked outstanding. Just a great, great performance all round. And Kelvin Cater, again, You know, at 145, he is a contender that, you know, maybe one more win, he'll be fighting for the belt pretty soon. If not his next fight, because he certainly looked good enough. As I say, my apologies, Kelvin. I'd have to go down and watch that again before I gave a breakdown because I focused on all the other fights. I've seen so many fights since then, you know. It's just so hard. I think he's getting punched in the head all these years. I forget very quickly. Here's Harrington again, noting. What is he saying? Oh. All right. Harrington, verbalize it. Verbal.
I'm sorry. I was just trying to give, to add a little something. I've been a big fan of Cater since he came into the UFC. I was excited to see how he was going to do in the championship rounds. In the fourth and fifth rounds, he was throwing more volume than he was in the first three rounds. So I do think he is a fighter who's built to fight 25-minute fights in the UFC. And as he moves closer to that top five ranking, we're going to see more of that. So I'm excited.
Yeah, no. I agree. And that is obviously because he prepared accordingly. But then also because by the time you're getting to rounds three, four, certainly five, you figured out your opponent. You figured out the timing. In round one, you got to be a little cagey. You know, like in round one, a lot of fights, there's a feeling out process. You got to see what your opponent's going to give you. You got to try and read his movements, try and figure out his timing. You know what I mean? You don't want to be too... you don't want to throw caution to the wind. Sometimes you see that. Sometimes some guys just go right at them. But a lot of the time, there's often a feeling out process. So as I'm saying, by rounds three and four, that's kind of eradicated. You've got it. Let's go to fucking war. And certainly for someone like Kelvin in that fight, who was just, you know, kind of slowly but surely tearing away on the scorecards. He was winning the exchanges. He had the reach advantage and he had his timing down. So, you know, that makes sense. It is logical. But yeah. A good note.
That's
a massive
tool that I think people don't, and obviously you know better than most, you know, highest resting heart rate in UFC history, Mr. Lowest. Michael Bisping, whatever Lowest. It was. You know what the fuck I meant. But the point is, like, that is a tool that I think is sort of, people don't get enough credit for how important that is. Because
what, conditioning?
Being in shape, having great cardio, being able to sort of not only just even physically, but mentally know that you can go there, you know? And I think that that's something that I learned when I've trained a little bit, where it's like, you know, if you are tired and you're exhausted and you're sweating and you have nothing left in the gas tank, you can't even lift your hands up. It's absolutely impossible. And we see it happen a lot where it's like maybe a guy may not be as good on paper, but he has better conditioning and he ends up winning the fight.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I'm not saying that he wasn't the better guy. We're not suggesting that, but you are correct. I've said it before, and I just say real fast. I learned that lesson the hard way. It was a kickboxing fight. I think it was 20 or 21 years old. I just met Rebecca because I know she was there. And, Alan Clarkey from the Black Knights in Burnley, Lancashire, England, of course, called up and said, "Mate, you been training?" Of course, I hadn't been training. I hadn't been near a gym. He said, "Because I've got a British title fight, 8 rounds for you on Saturday if you want to take it." I was like, "Yeah, sure, I'll take it." I went running a couple of times and I went out there. My game plan was to beat him, to knock him out pretty quick. The guy was tough. You know, I wasn't able to knock him out. I beat him up pretty good for 4 rounds. And then 4 rounds, after that, I was done. I had nothing left. I was totally spent. And it's the loneliest place in the world. And for the next 4 rounds, I got the shit kicked out of me. Pretty good. You know what I mean? But then I'd done, my first 4 were more impressive than the last 4. And I got it just by the skin of my teeth. Yeah. But then that taught me a very valuable lesson. Never go into a fight, because those four 3-minute rounds is all they were. But that was the longest time frame ever. Each round felt like a fucking eternity. I couldn't fight back. It's like my hands were in quicksand. I was like hands on my knees between rounds. I was fucking, and then of course you got a guy that's
trying to just fucking murder you with his hands.
Yeah, it's trust me, when you've been in that situation, that's when you're like, yeah, make sure you're in shape. Number one, listen, all the technical stuff is great, but the one thing you want to make sure is that you're in fucking shape, because if you don't get him out of there quickly, you're in a really bad situation.
Yeah. That is a lesson that I will always sort of hold true. And I remember you saying that, and the first time I ever trained, where I just couldn't breathe, and you get taken down and you're trying to wrestle. Then you're trying to grapple when you can't breathe and you have the cord. It's like, I would rather get kicked in the head than even attempt a takedown.
I don't know about that. You know, because
you have a different spirit than I do.
Oh yeah. No, I haven't got what it takes. I haven't got the animal spirit that Luis Gomez Jay Gomez possesses. Let's run through some of these notes real fast. So,
yeah.
Number one, and well done, Harrington, for compiling these as usual. But number one, UFC announced UFC 253 will now feature Adesanya versus Paulo Costa for the middleweight title. Harrington, is that replacing, was that Gaethje and Khabib?
Yeah, well, here's the problem with Harrington. He put number one should have been number two. Number two should have been number one because that is actually number two.
It is. All right. So as a result of Khabib, Harrington, speak. You're on camera. Just speak. No. Show yourself. Come on.
I'm here.
Break it down for us, baby boy.
Okay. So initially, as we pointed out on the show before, it was penciled in that September was going to be the unification bout between Justin Gaethje and Khabib to figure out what was going on with the lightweight title there. Unfortunately, we know Khabib's father passed away. He's taking that very hard. He's grieving the loss, and he won't be ready for that September card. So instead, they put Israel Adesanya versus Paulo Costa in there, and they are looking to target Khabib versus Gaethje later in the year.
Yeah, and then there's one other element, isn't there, that apparently Ali Abdelaziz or Khabib or someone gave some blessing to go after the Conor fight, and he said, I don't want that fight. Just give me that detail.
Yeah. So Ali is doing all the talking here, obviously, because he reps both fighters. And he came out and said that Khabib gave him the pass. He said, look, if he doesn't want to wait, if he wants to go get that big money fight with Conor, he has my blessing, no ill will. Justin said, absolutely no interest. He's waiting, you know, to unify those titles, and then he'll go figure out what's next.
That's Ali trying to get another Conor fight for another fucking huge $20 million payday.
I guess if you're a cynic, yeah, you could unwrap it like that and say, yeah, well, okay, Khabib versus Justin isn't happening. Okay, let's do Khabib versus Tony because I'll still get paid. But no, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. You know, of course, Khabib is grieving, he's mourning his father, and he meant a lot to him. So I'm not, everyone's father means a lot to him. What am I saying? So, I mean, yeah, of course, he's got to take as much time as possible because I can only imagine what he's going through. And, you know, my condolences once more. So, yeah, it makes sense. But Justin, I want to say Tony, I don't know what's going on. It's still early here. But Justin versus Conor would be a tremendous fight. And I know we know Conor wants to get back in there. So you never know. There is possibility of that. But I respect so much that Justin's like, no, I don't want the money. I want the undisputed title. You know, I mean, that, you know, it speaks volume about the man.
Yeah, I mean, it does. Depending on how long Khabib wants to take off. I mean, at one point, Gaethje's going to have to fight again. And you don't, here's the problem. This is a weird position to be in for Gaethje, right? Yes, he wants to wait, but without an actual date for Khabib to come back. Well, now Conor, which is this massive, massive fight. It's like, you know, it's just such a massive payday. It's like hitting the lottery. Where you win, lose, or fucking draw, you're getting a shit ton of money, shit ton of eyes. And honestly, Gaethje could win that fight. That is a crazy fight. That fight is so fun. But the problem is, Conor isn't going to wait around, right? So Conor's going to end up taking another fight. And if Conor loses another fight, well, then the ability to sort of make that much money off that fight, it doesn't go out the window completely. But every time Conor loses, it takes a little bit of that sort of mystique and unbeatable thing away. So I think for Gaethje, if he waits too long, you know, who knows what could happen? The MMA landscape could change right underneath his nose, and then all of a sudden the biggest fights possible aren't there for him anymore.
No, absolutely. I mean, but you got to say, I mean, that is an incredible fight, though. Justin Gaethje versus Conor McGregor. That is fucking huge. Oh, I was asking Rebecca to close the blinds because now the sun's coming up and it's shining right through onto my face and overexposing me just a little bit. I mean, yeah, he can't wait around forever. Can't wait forever. And of course, we don't know, you know, how long Khabib's going to want to take out. You know, it's an open-ended thing. So I guess right now is that, no, I'll wait. And I think Khabib said he'll fight before the end of the year.
Okay.
I think he said I'll fight before the end of the year. And the UFC have said, listen, however long it takes, you know, then they understand. They're not going to start. Well, from what they said, it doesn't sound like they're going to start saying, listen, you know, we're going to bring in we're going to strip you or anything like that. I mean, come on, his dad and his main coach just died. He's grieving, you know, and there has to be a natural run of events. And, you know, there's a certain time frame that needs to pass, you know, to deal with that kind of thing. So, stepping in, Adesanya versus Costa. That's another fucking killer fight, you know?
Did they,
go on.
I'm sorry, was that already, was that on another card already with a date, or they just gave that a date for the first time?
I think it was supposed to be down the line. Harrington will probably tell you more on that one. I think it was supposed to be down the line. I did see Dana talking about it last week and he shut it down, but of course now it seems like they've got it done. I think they finally, they must have it done because it's being reported on all the websites. Is that right, Harrington?
Yeah, I know that Rogan came out and said that they were planning to use these two to bring back Tough. So I think that it was they were going to film the whole season and put it down the line. Obviously, they need to fill this big spot now at 253. So I think that was why they made the move.
Got it. Got it. Makes sense. Yeah, I mean, listen, unfortunately, they're going to put on, you know, unfortunately, if Khabib can't fight, they're going to replace that. And that's a fantastic replacement. I mean, that is a really, really interesting fight. Of course, Adesanya looks incredible lately. He's fucking awesome. He's, what was his last fight? Oh, Yoel Romero. Okay, that wasn't, it was kind of one he'll forget. But everyone has the odd sleeper here and there. Not every fight can be, you know, fight of
the year. It's also so dangerous that it's like you can't blame somebody for coming out and fighting a safer fight. We just watched it happen with oh my God, I'm blanking.
Yeah, come on, come on. Think, baby.
Come on.
Come on.
Come on. Come on. We got it. Oh, Masvidal and Usman. Yeah. So yeah, it's fighting a smart fight sometimes isn't the most appealing. But overall, throughout history, I don't think anybody's gonna pick apart those one or two slower performances. And
he had the fight of the year with Kelvin Gastelum. He knocked out cold Robert Whittaker twice in effect. And then all right, he has a bit of a snoozer against Romero, but it was a strategic approach. You know, I mean, that's a fucking dangerous fight for anybody. Now
what I didn't know.
Pardon me?
I didn't know that Israel Adesanya was 6'4" and that Paulo Costa was 6'.
No, Adesanya is really tall.
Really tall.
When I first met him, I was like, oh shit, you're a big boy. And do you know what? I think the talk on the street is that he could actually make 170 if he was to really, you know, do a weight cut.
Really? He's
apparently
very thin.
Well, there you go. He's very thin. He's very lean. You know, so... Yeah. I don't know, but that's what I've heard. I don't know. I don't hang around. I don't see what he weighs in the morning. You know, I'm not privy to that. I'm not saying, yo, Adesanya, Israel, pardon me, what is your weight this morning? I don't know. Maybe that's just bullshit. Maybe that's a theory. Mm-hmm. But I think when he was kickboxing, he was way lighter than what he is now. So anyway, but against Costa, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's a great fight because, you know, Costa's got the power. Israel's got the technique. You know, he's definitely the more capable, flashier striker. He's got more technique, but the power of Costa and the chin of Costa, and he's going to go forward. He's not going to do what Romero did. He's a fucking monster. And the takedown defense he showed against Romero as well, he was able to stop all those takedowns. Adesanya's not going to go for a takedown. This is all going to be on the feet. If anyone's going to go for a takedown, it will be Costa. But he just fucking goes forward like a madman, swinging wild, heavy shots. You know, so you got the technician against the brawler. You got the faster guy against the stronger guy. It's a fucking great matchup.
And both these guys are undefeated. When is the last time we've seen two undefeated
fighters? Just
talk a second. I'm going
to close these blinds a little bit.
It's okay. Well, I want to ask you this question because you might even know, but maybe Harrington, you could chime in. When's the last time we've seen two undefeated fighters compete for a UFC title?
I can give you the answer to that if you want it.
Sure. I love it.
Rashad Evans versus Lyoto Machida is the only time it's ever officially happened. There's one other time John Jones versus Daniel Cormier would be
that wasn't undefeated though. John Jones, yeah, he had a loss. So yeah, okay, so we have seen that before.
Jones hasn't really got a loss though. That one against Matt Hamill doesn't count.
It does. I mean, we could say all day long that it doesn't count. It counts. Matt Hamill thinks it counts. Ask Matt Hamill right now how he feels about it.
No, fair enough. I'm not trying to take anything away from Matt's career.
Why are you trying to take away from Matt Hamill's history, bro? You're a fighter. You're a piece of shit. Matt Hamill beat John Jones fair and square. The better man won that night.
Okay, yeah, that's right. That's right. No, hey, listen, you're right. The record books show it was a loss. What are we talking about? Because as I went to adjust the blinds, that made no difference whatsoever.
The question was that when's the last time we saw two undefeated fighters fight for a UFC title? And then Harrington said it was Machida versus Rashad was the first time that it happened, and I guess the only time that it had happened. So this is interesting. It's one man is going to walk out with a loss on his record, and it's for a title. It's like all the fucking glory, dude. One guy walks out feeling it's lower than low. It is way worse than anything
else.
What
is the expression they use in that circumstance, Lewis? What is the expression? Give it to me.
All or nothing?
Somebody's O has to go.
Somebody's O has to go. I've never heard this.
Oh, come on. No. When I fought Rashad Evans, we were both 15-0. Someone's O had to go. It was mine. It went 15-1. I was like, you son of a bitch.
A lot of people thought you won that fight.
Well, they did. But still, the record. But don't try and take away Rashad's win, bro. Okay? Don't try and take away from Rashad. He beat me fair and square. Goddamn SOB. Love you, Rashad. Shit. How about that? I mean, we were just talking there. I think you mentioned DC versus Stipe 3 coming up. I mean, fuck me. That's an incredible fight. I can't wait for that one. And that's the next pay-per-view. That's just in a few weeks, like four weeks. I mean, it's just big fight after big fight after big fight with the UFC. They're on a roll right now.
It's a good time to be a UFC fan, mixed martial arts fan. Other sports seem to be coming back as well. I know that they're doing stadium or fanless stadium baseball games now. I know the Yankees are supposed to start playing again. So, look, society slowly but surely will come back to normal. We do have to wrap this one up. It's a little bit shorter of a show today, unfortunately. We're going to do an extra long show later on in the week, though. Me and Bisping have both committed to this, so we'll do an extra show. Answer a lot of the fan questions. If you guys love the show, please subscribe to our YouTube channel right now. Just search Michael Bisping Podcast or Believe You Me Podcast. Hit the notification button. Subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star ranking and a positive review. And you get access to the entire on-demand library. Every episode that we've ever done of this show, uncensored and ad-free at gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use that promo code BYM for a 14-day free trial. Mr. Bisping.
Yes.
Have yourself a great day. Enjoy your time with your family. I know it's been a while.
You're bowing out. How long have we been going? Is it not over that an hour. Short, is it? Really? Yeah, no, over an hour?
Oh, yeah.
Really? Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough. You got places to be. You know, you got to take your son somewhere. We get it. That's fine.
My niece's birthday.
Oh, so, yeah. Well, you're taking James, I'm assuming.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, there you're gonna take. You had somewhere to take James. There you go. Your niece's birthday. Well, I hope you have a great day. Apologize for the short show, everybody. As you know, Lewis just explained, we will do a longer one back in the week, later in the week. Pardon me. Enjoy yourselves. Be well, and we'll see you in a few days.